Good afternoon, everybody. I had a strength in my youth. I had the ability to run and run fast. I think I inherited that from my dad. Long legs, a thin frame. And my dad told me when I was little, if you want to run faster than everybody else, imagine that you have a rope on your wrist tied to your knee and pump your arms. And when you're running, whatever that arm does, that wrist, it has to be matched by the knee. So pull. When you pull this arm up, that knee has to come up with it. And vice versa, you begin pumping and pumping and pumping. And you know it's true. I ran very fast. There was a game that the teacher had the class play in elementary school. There will always be one person that was picked. That's how it started out. And that person was the fox. The rest of the class were the geese. And there was a little verbal exchange that we would go through. And then all the kids in the class would run to try and get to the other side where the fox was. And the fox's job was to catch as many kids as he could. And they would become foxes. Eventually, you would have one goose left, and the rest of the class were all the foxes. And often, I was the last one, because nobody could catch me. When I got older, I ran track. But I had a weakness. My weakness was is that I never took it seriously. Because I always relied on my strength, that I could run. I never really worked out seriously. I was never in shape. Because every race that I ever entered, I just knew that I could run. And run I did. And I won. But my weaknesses ended up undoing the last race I ever ran. I didn't recognize or realize my weaknesses during the years that I would run, but I've had opportunity now that I'm older to think back on it and to recognize that the weaknesses that I had that I never addressed or dealt with were my undoing in that last race that I ran. It was one lap around the track. And it was an important race. I didn't train for it. I was out of shape. But I recognized that the fellas that I was running against in this particular race, they looked like runners. They were thin like I was. A lot of them had long legs like I did. And I wasn't particularly happy with my position on the track because I was the last one out of 10 runners. And you know, the way you line up on a track, really everybody runs the same distance. I had the inside, which means I'm the last guy, and then it staggers to racer number one, who's way ahead of you. And from my vantage point, he was way ahead of me. And I thought, I have to catch the number one runner. So when the gun went off, that was my goal. I had to catch all those nine in front of me. So my one big mistake was that I didn't run a smart race at all. I had no pace. It was just full throttle from the start. Now, when we got to the straightaway after the first turn, I caught up to that guy who happened to be in first place, and I passed him. And as we were coming down the straightaway, there was a bit of distance between me and the rest of the group. When I ended up coming around the last corner, I don't know, I've never run into what they call the wall because I never ran any distance to face it. Perhaps I hit that wall. I had depleted all my energy. I had ran so hard, so fast, that my body was saying, you're not going any further. And it was difficult because in my mind, I'm thinking just a couple of more steps, just a little bit further. I'm around the last corner. The finish line is close. But I didn't have the physical strength to push through that. Neither did I have the mental strength. And my body just quit on me. I couldn't run. I couldn't even force myself to run. I tried, but my body just didn't respond. I was about from here to the door, the back door where the clock is. And I totally stopped in the middle of the race. I was able to take about 3 steps. I heard all the footsteps behind me. And about when I was taking the 4th step, all of the runners just passed me. And I lost that race and I came in last. I want to talk today about strengths and weaknesses. We have to be honest with ourselves in assessing our strengths and identifying our weaknesses. Because, brethren, we're all running in a race right now. It's not just any race. The race that we're running in right now is the most difficult of all races. And yet, the prizes, plural, at the end of this race that we're in, are magnificent. Notice what we read in Hebrews 12. In verse 1 of Hebrews 12, we read, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run. He says, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. If our weaknesses are not dealt with, eventually they will lead to our undoing. That's exactly what happened to me. I relied on my strength, but my weaknesses canceled that out. Eventually, I came to a race where it happened. It was the last competitive race I've ever been in. And it ended on a sour note. Solomon had a weakness, and it led to his undoing. You know, he started off so strong. He started off with such momentum and such stride. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 3. Beginning in verse 5. We read, at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask, what shall I give you? What if God came to your house, rang the doorbell, you answered it, and you recognize that's God at the door, and he says, ask, what should I give you? What do you want? For me, I'd like to go on a cruise. I've been wanting to go on a cruise for so long, but Mary Beth doesn't want to go. I think I would ask for a cruise. I'd like the presidential suite, the biggest and the baddest suite that ship has, and for God to make Mary Beth come with me. I think I'd ask a whole bunch of other things too. Would you do that? This is what Solomon answered. And Solomon said, you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him and you've given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? Look how he starts. Incredible momentum. An incredible beginning to his rulership. Strong in stride in what he's asking God for. But he had a weakness. And it was his undoing. 1 Kings 11. In verse 1 we read, But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonites, Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, You shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. And Solomon clung to these in love. And in verse 3, and he had 700 wives. Did he love one? Because he was unfaithful to all of them. How could you possibly be devoted to one wife when your time and attention was spent looking for and marrying another? Think about this. If he married once a month, to marry 700 times would take 58 years. If he married twice a month, to marry 700 times would take 29 years. If he married once a week, to marry 700 times would take about 13 and a half years. Can you hear his wedding planner? O king, your wedding for tomorrow is all set. But it comes into conflict with your wedding anniversary with 16 of your other wives. You know what his weakness was? He was a selfish man. Do you think that he had a loving, caring relationship with anyone he married? I don't think so. Did he ever find the one? Did he ever find the one to have and to hold in sickness and in health until death do us part? I don't think so. He tried 700 times. You would think after, what, 10? Maybe you should quit. It's not going to happen for you. Notice the second chapter of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. In verse 1, Solomon says, I said in my heart, come now. I'll test you with mirth, which is gladness. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely, this was vanity. I said of laughter, it's madness. And of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my works great. I built houses. I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants. I had servants born in my house. And yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. He continues, so I became great. I excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem, and also my wisdom remained with me. And whatever my eye desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. In these short verses, I counted 16 times that he says, I. You know what selfishness is? Selfishness is a black hole. And the more you feed it, the larger it becomes. He says in verse 11, I looked on all the work that my hands had done, and all the labor in which I had toiled, and all was vanity in grasping for the wind. And there was no profit under the sun. Nothing, he says. No profit. He's unfulfilled. He's unhappy. All that he's done, all that he set his mind and heart to do for himself. And he's empty. Because he's selfish. And he says in verse 17, here's his conclusion at the time. He says, therefore, I hated life. Because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me. Unfulfilled, unhappy. For it's all vanity and grasping for the wind. And in verse 18, and then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun because I must leave it to the man who must come after me. You mean to tell me that there was not one wife he truly cared about? There wasn't a one. That he wanted her well-being after he was gone. Oh, that's right. He had 700 of them. There wasn't a son or a daughter or a niece or a nephew. There wasn't anyone in his own family that he could give something to after he's gone. You know why he's so upset? Because he can't take everything with him to the grave. His weakness was that he was a selfish man. He started off fantastic, but it was his undoing, his selfishness. Let's look at a strength. I don't think he had this strength. 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13. Paul says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I've become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. I'm sure there was a lot of noise. All the weddings that Solomon had for himself. Plenty of music, plenty of fanfare. I feel sorry for all of his brides because I don't think he gave any one of them anything because he was selfish. Paul continues in verse 2, and though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but if I have not love, he says, I'm nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Love is not puffed up. It's not about the self. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth and bears all things. Do you think Solomon did these things? Why would he? One slight, one disagreement, one wrinkle, one gray hair on his wife that he was with, he had no reason to stay. Because he went out and he married another. Selfishness in marriage is a bed of nails. And no one is happy living on a bed of nails. In verse 8, it says, love never fails. Love is the cement in a marriage relationship. Actually, it's the cement in all successful relationships. Solomon's weakness was his undoing. 1 Kings 11. First Kings 11 and verse 4, we read, "For it was so, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods." That's an amazing thing, because God appeared to him, talked to him, asked him, "What do you want?" And God not only gave him what he asked for, but even what he did not ask for. And here, he goes after other gods made of stone and made of wood that don't hear, don't see, and can do nothing for you. And he serves them. His selfishness was his undoing. And his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonites, after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and did not fully follow the Lord as did his father David. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab. That god, human sacrifices were made to it. And he built an altar for that false god on the hill that is east of Jerusalem. And for Molech, Molech was the god that children were sacrificed to. What's happened to his thinking? That he's serving gods that there is such a distasteful, horrible practice in serving those false gods. And he's right there in the middle of it. And verse 8, and he did likewise for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. So the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned. Because he never addressed his weaknesses. Brethren, we're running in a race. Very, very high stakes. Very challenging, very difficult. But the rewards are mind-boggling. That's the race we're running now. And we can't win it if we're selfish. I want to look at a strength. David had a strength. 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 18. It's a strength that we all must come to have if we're going to win this race 1 Samuel 18 and verse 20. Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. So Saul said, I will give her to him that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Saul is selfish. His only interest in getting his daughter with David is so that he could ruin David. What a father-in-law. Therefore, Saul said to David a second time, you shall be my son-in-law today. And Saul commanded his servants, communicate with David secretly and say, look, the king has delight in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law. So Saul's servants spoke these words in the hearing of David, and David said, does it seem to you a light thing to be the king's son-in-law, seeing that I am poor and lightly esteemed man? And the servants of Saul told him, saying, in this manner David spoke. Then Saul said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. Now, this is just me. But if I was in my youth and the king's daughter is in love with me and I can be the king's son-in-law if I marry her, the one problem is 100 foreskins? I mean, wouldn't a pinky do it? Or a big toe? Or maybe your ear? I have to do this? Well, she better be really, really good looking, I would think. Notice what David does. So when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to become the king's son-in-law. Now the days had not expired, and this is what he does. Therefore David arose and went, he and his men, and killed 200 men of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins. You know what David's strength was? He was all in. Not halfway. Not partway. He was all in. Again, that David was all in. Notice Psalm 119. Psalm 119. These are his thoughts. These are his prayers. This is David revealing his strength. He says in verse 10 of Psalm 119, with my whole heart, I've sought you. There's no halfway about it. There's no partialness here. It's everything. All of him. And he meant it. 34, verse 34. Give me understanding, and I shall keep your law. Indeed, I shall observe it with my whole heart. 58. I entreated your favor with my whole heart. 69. Verse 69. The proud have forged a lie against me, but I will keep your precepts with my whole heart. This was a phenomenal strength that David had. And his approach, and how he walked with his God. He was all in. All in. 1 Corinthians 9. I just love the way Paul frames this section of Scripture. Because I ran a race that I lost. Because my weaknesses got the best of me. And it totally canceled out the strength that I had. He says, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? He says, run. Run in such a way that you may obtain it. He's saying, be all in. None of us will ever win any race if we're half in, a quarter in, 80% in. And the race we're now in, the stakes are so high. Unless you're all in, we can't finish it. Everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. They do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore, he's telling us how he ran his race, how he was running his race. He says, it's not with uncertainty. He says, I fight. Do you think he was half-hearted about that fight? Or 80% about that fight? He says, I'm not as one who beats the air. I know the race that I'm in. The goal is in my mind. And all of me is in it. And so he says in verse 27, I discipline my body. That's something I didn't do because I didn't take running seriously. I relied on a strength, the fact that I could run and run fast. I didn't work out properly. I didn't take it seriously enough. And it cost me. But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. Lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. We have to be all in if we are to finish this race that we're in. I want to look at another strength. And we find that in the book of Daniel. This is a strength that must be in us. Daniel chapter 3. I just want to break into it. It's a lengthy story. I just want to catch the strengths, or the strength here, in these three young men that they displayed. Very important to have this in this race that we're in. Daniel 3. Daniel 3, beginning in verse 12, we read, there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Namely, it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Brethren, that's a death sentence on these young men. As sure as the sun comes up tomorrow. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Boy, if that isn't being put on the spot in front of all those witnesses and in front of the king, there's an opportunity to lie, an opportunity to compromise to get out of it. But it doesn't look like it lets them answer yet. He says, now, he's giving them an out. He says, now, if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made good, they're going to live. Everything will be okay. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hand? That's quite a bit of a pickle, isn't it? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered. They all said the same thing. They were all on the same page. And they said, O King Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, Our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. You know what strength they had? They had the heart of a lion. They're standing immovable and are living fully the truth they were taught, no matter what. And so should we, no matter what, because we're in a race. High stakes, high reward, high prize. Without the heart of a lion, we're not going to make it. 1 Timothy. First Timothy in chapter 6. For a little context, we'll begin in verse 10. Paul says, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness." Just plain selfishness. "And pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold of eternal life." You know what this is? This is the heart of a lion. There's no timidity here. But it's to run the race that we're running with boldness. Brethren, it's about attitude and approach to change. It's about attitude and approach to growth. It's about attitude and approach to bearing fruit. It's about how we run this race we're in. It's with purpose. It's with commitment. And it's with boldness. And that is the heart of a lion. I want to look at another strength. Luke 17. Jesus Christ says in Luke 17, beginning in verse 7, he says, "Which of you, having a servant plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, 'Come at once and sit down to eat'? But will he not rather say to him, 'Prepare something for my supper. Gird yourself, serve me till I have eaten and drunk, and afterward you will eat and drink'? Does he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I think not," says Jesus Christ. "So likewise you, when you have done all those things which you are commanded, say, 'We are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty to do.'" We must go above and beyond what is our duty to do. So much of life is about checklists, isn't it? I mean, when a pilot's about to take off on the airplane, they go through this enormous checklist. We all have checklists one way or the other, don't we? I mean, sometimes they're mental ones. Sometimes there's stuff we write down. But we also have church checklists, don't we? We're here on the Sabbath. We're observing the Sabbath. Well, there's a tick mark for that checklist. We go to the holy days, another checklist. We can mark that off, clean and unclean meats, another tick there. But is that running our race about the checklists? Because the checklists, those are the things that are our duty to do. We must go above and beyond what is our duty to do. That's why over the years we have heard so much in the church about overcoming. Why we have heard so much about the necessity to change, to bear fruit and to grow, and about character. Because we're not going to win any races if it's just all about checklists. It takes all of you. It takes all of me. It takes being all in. Revelation 3. Revelation 3 and verse 1, it says, "And to the angel of the church in Sardis write." It's to the church. Are there checklists here? What identifies the church of God? The Sabbath? Check. Other doctrines that we keep, that they kept? Check. These things says he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your works, that you have a name, that you're alive, but you're dead. We're not going to win any races if we're described as dead. Verse 14, and to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans. It's the church. What identifies the church? Doctrinal practices? I would think they're keeping the Sabbath at some level. Check. The holy days at some level. Check. But Jesus Christ says in verse 15, I know your works. You're neither cold nor hot. We're not going to win any races with one leg. We're not going to win any races if we're half in. This is what Paul says in 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Let's break into it in verse 23 where he says, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in death often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. 1 night and 1 day I've been in the deep. Isn't this enough? All right already. All these obstacles, all these trials, all these difficulties, you need to pull out of the race. Now. Right? He says, in journeys, often in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness. But you know something? Paul didn't quit. He was all in. He went above and beyond. Because he understood the significance of the race he was running. And he was going to win it and finish it because it's that valuable. We're running the exact race. And he's leaving something for us here to encourage us. Because our race isn't finished yet. Which means we have to keep running. All in. Going above and beyond. Titus chapter 2. In verse 7, Paul says, in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, and sound speech that cannot be condemned. This is more than just checklists. It's a way of life. It takes all of me. It takes all of you. Every fiber of your being, all of your heart, all of your mind, and all of your strength. This is the race that we're in. That one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Wow, what a way to live your life, that no one can say anything negative about you. In order to win this race, brethren, we are in, we must go above and beyond what is our duty to do. The last strength I want to look at briefly. It's in Psalm 23. Psalm 23. You know, when I read this the other day, I thought to myself that this is a passage about faith. Faith is a strength. And Psalm 23 is a passage about faith. Because what David is saying is that I see you, God, in my life. I have faced, and I do face difficulties. And at times, those difficulties are impossible. But I am confident, and I am bold, and I am continuing to run this race that I'm in because I see you. And I know that you are with me. That's what David is saying. Notice Psalm 23, beginning in verse 1. He says, "The Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want." That word means lack. I'm not going to lack anything because of who's in my life. And whatever I need, strength, encouragement, help, I know I'll get it because who's in my life. He says, "He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters when there's turbulence in your life." He says, "He restores my soul." There's peace available from God. "He leads me in the paths of righteousness, guidance. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." He's not stopping. He continues to walk, even though he's facing things that he knows in his heart, this could be the end of me. But he says, "I'm not afraid of it." Why? Because he says, "For you're with me." I see that. I know that. "And your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Tremendous encouragement. "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." There's nourishment. He says, "You anoint my head with oil and my cup runs over." Blessings. He says, "Surely." I'm sure of it. He says, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life." It's not all about the physical. He says, "And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." He understood to some length the race that he was in. And that race entailed a future. We're in that same exact race. And God has preserved this 23rd Psalm to understand how important it is to have faith. Brethren, that's why we continue to run. God will see you through. God will help you through. He called you to be in this race. None of us volunteered for it, but we've been called. And if we've been baptized, that means we've accepted. We lined up on those blocks. We heard the gun go off. I think every single one of us, when we were baptized, we started off strong. It's important to look at the weaknesses that we might have in our life. Because if we don't address them, they will be our undoing. Philippians 1, in verse 6, Paul says, being confident. Confident. Not a question in your mind. Confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. That's the end of our race. Have faith. Build it. It's a strength that you and I need to finish this race. Matthew 7, This is what Jesus Christ says in verse 24 of Matthew 7. He says, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on the house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock." What are the walls of your house? One of those walls is that you have to be all in. You can't build anything of value unless you're all in. It's about dedication. It's about diligence. We have to be all in. What about having the heart of a lion? That's another wall in your house. When you're building something, it always seems that you run into a problem, a setback. Always something when you're trying to build something of value. It just never seems to go smoothly. You have to be bold to just face it and work through it and have the heart of a lion. Paul did. When he faced such unimaginable issues and problems and setbacks, he was beaten, he was hungry, he was without clothes at times. He just kept on running. Another wall of that house has to be that we go above and beyond. Really, are you going to build anything of value if we just meet the minimum? Just the minimum. Just the bare minimum. That's where we'll go. Done. Checklist. It has to be maximum. Maximum effort. Maximum desire. And you do that. If that's a wall of your house, that's a strong house. What about the wall of faith? You have to run this race with confidence. Because who is with you? That's God Himself. You can see the opposite. In verse 26, this is a house that's a weak house. He says, everyone in verse 26 who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. Anyone who builds a house on sand is not all in. No time was spent digging to anchor that house in a good, strong foundation. Was there a heart of a lion? The problems, the issues, the setbacks that might have been encountered in building this house. It's so much easier to ignore it, skip it, cut corners, and just build the house on sand anyway. Any person that builds a house like this on sand is not going above and beyond. It's about the checklist, the minimum standard. Well, the duty is to comply with this rule or this regulation, and we'll just meet it right there. You know, if you consider faith, there is no hope of confidence that this house is going to withstand the beating of society, the beating of Satan, the devil, of our own human nature. And this is what it says in verse 27, "And the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew, beat on the house, and it fell." Because it was full of weaknesses that the person who built it never addressed. The two houses looked identical before the storms came. One stood, one did not. Do you know your strengths? Do you know your weaknesses? If our weaknesses are not dealt with, eventually they will lead to our undoing. I lost a race because my weakness has got the best of me. Hebrews 12. Paul says in verse 1, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. We're all in this race now. And it's a race of such magnitude. Difficult, yes. But the rewards, unbelievable. Strengths are built. Weaknesses remain if we neglect them. Tomorrow's the day of Pentecost. You know, God gave His Holy Spirit to those that He calls. Well, He gave it and gives it to those He calls to be in this race. God's Spirit is a great gift, and it's a great tool that we must utilize to develop our strengths and to identify and deal with our weaknesses so that we can win. So that we can win this race that we're in.